You're listening to a podcast from 702.
This hour, we look at the state of the DA. And why are we doing so? Well, because the official opposition matters. We don't need any more reason than that. If you want to add an extra sentence, the lifeblood of competitive politics, which is what any democracy needs, is for multi-party democracy to be thriving so that you can have alternatives to a government of the day, not least a government like the ANC-led one, with all its major flaws that you and I were discussing in the open line. So we need to put the spotlight also on the other political parties and see whether they may be viable and attractive alternatives to you. To that end, the DA has had a series of challenges in the last few months. It all started with election results that should have been better than they were, and the process underway to self-examine what might have gone wrong, or if you want to be more positive, what the party may yet do better. And then in recent weeks, a whole range of political news reports around leadership contestation, daggers being out allegedly for Musi Maimane, by-election results not always going their way and what have you. So a range of issues, but the overarching theme for this hour is that we are having a discussion about the state of the Democratic Alliance. I'm going to be joined by various people throughout the hour. For the moment, let me first and foremost welcome in our Cape Talk studios a journalist and author that I think has a very magisterial understanding of the DA, and that is one Jan-Jan Joubert. Jan-Jan, goeiemôre.
Goeiemôre, Eusebius. Good morning.
And joining us at short notice, and I'm really grateful, him and I love engaging each other. He's very, very busy, and he's not going to join us for too long, but I'm glad that he's taken out some time to come on the Eusebius McKayser show. In my home province of the Eastern Cape, DA Federal Chairperson, Mr. Ethel Trollope. Ethel, good morning. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Good morning, Eusebius. Thanks very much for having me on your show. And good morning, Jan-Jan.
Good morning, Mr. Trollope.
Mr. Trollope, I'm going to start with you because we don't have you for the entire hour. Can I start with a broad question? From a process point of view, where is factually the Democratic Alliance at with that audit process, that process that was meant to be a hard, long look at what might have gone awry in the election?
Eusebius, we've undergone a review process that started shortly after the elections, and the preliminary report was presented to Mr. Maimane on Monday, and the final report will be presented to our Federal Council in the middle of the month.
Have you had a citing of its main findings?
No, I haven't. There's no written report that was presented. It was presented verbally to Mr. Maimane on Monday.
Is there a leadership crisis, as you see it, within the Democratic Alliance?
I don't think there's a leadership crisis at all. I think the Democratic Alliance, as you said in your introduction, had a less than spectacular election. We were all very disappointed about it. And we need to do some introspection, and the review process is part of that. And it depends how we handle the recommendations from the review panel, whether we will recover from our setback in 2019. And I think that's always the challenge. If you do introspection and you do it honestly and you reflect on where your strengths and weaknesses are, if you concentrate on improving the strengths and eliminating the weaknesses, things can improve.
You are as close to an honest politician as one can get. That's part of the reason I enjoy engaging you. A panel will have its own view, and hopefully it will be a view that is enhanced by slight critical distance to the party, even if they have some affinity with the party as a panel. But I wonder what your own reflections have been now that distance has been put between the election and the moment we are at right now today on the 1st of October. I mean, if you think back with the perfect science of hindsight, what do you think went wrong? Because as a commentator, if I look at the state of the state, Mr. Trollope, and I look at the ANC and what a hot mess the country has been in under the Zuma years, and we still haven't recovered from it, that was a gift to the DA. And whatever the PR machinery might say publicly, I really thought that anything less than getting close to 30% nationally would be a disaster in the context of an ANC that was a hot mess and still is.
Look, Eusebius, I made my submissions to the review panel, and I spent a long time thinking about my submission. I've been in this party a long, long time. I reflected on the fact that we probably had the best opportunity ever to really do well with the ANC backsliding. And the reason for the ANC backsliding, I'll just mention it for 1 second, was that in the last three successive elections, they've gone backwards prior to this one. And they obviously didn't do any proper introspection, and they refused to change their behavior, and they refused to do anything about Jacob Zuma. So we should, by all accounts, have had a great opportunity to do well. But we were faced with the Ramaphosa and the promises of a new dawn by Cyril Ramaphosa, who has now admitted that the new dawn has become something of a new yawn, or it has disappeared. So we had, for the first time, instead of having the luxury of competing against somebody like Jacob Zuma, we were competing against an ANC that had reinvigorated itself by appointing somebody in the form of Cyril Ramaphosa, who held all this hope, and many journalists and many members of the media and the public were excited about what this would hold. So that was something that we had to contend with. But also, I think, if I reflect without going too deeply into this matter, because I've made my submission to the review panel, I think when you become complacent as any organization, complacency, if it sits into an organization, whether you market a commodity or whether you're a political party, it leads to one taking things for granted. And I think to a certain extent, we might have taken things for granted. We might have taken support from certain communities for granted. And that didn't materialize or didn't quite get what we expected. And I think familiarity sometimes breeds contempt, if I can use that cliche. And I think maybe we were a victim of that. So we need to really look at if we were being too familiar or being too complacent, what we need to do to address that.
I want to tease out one or two things there, and then I've got a last set of questions, then I'll leave you for today, Mr. Trollope. You know, if Mr. Ramaphosa, with or without the help of a Peter Bruce columnist here or there, has around them a word cloud association of hope and a new dawn, even if it were to become a new yawn weeks after the election, you obviously then have to fight for that center and that new dawn narrative if that is where you want to contest, or at least make sure that they don't hold on to power in large numbers by selling a dud to the voters. Did you lack the ability, whether it be oratorically or in the content of your messaging, to do precisely that? Because if Cyril, for argument's sake, played effectively in the center, if his dulcet tones instilled a sense of hope, where were your politicians meeting him toe to toe from the communicative side and the one extreme to the other extreme in terms of the content of the messaging then? Because that's what politics is about. It's a contestation of ideas. It's a contestation of communication. Why were you lacking in those regards?
Well, look, I think to a certain extent we might not have competed well enough against Cyril Ramaphosa. You know, momentum is a great thing in politics, so he brought some momentum. It didn't really help the ANC either. They went back 5%. You know, we went back 1.7%, so they had a bad election as well. And the reality is that the ANC shed votes to the EFF, and we shed votes to the Freedom Front Plus. And I believe that both of those options were used in this election by voters, but I don't believe that either of them represent a prosperous future for South Africa. So I think voters will refocus after this election. But be that as it may, I think, Eusebius, we also made some really bad mistakes. We had a number of own goals that we were having to defend on the back foot or explain. And another cliche is if you are explaining in politics, you're losing.
Yeah.
And we spent a lot of time in our election campaign explaining and trying to contextualize what this one had said and what that one had done, and it really counted against us. So
Absolutely. We
need to install some discipline in our party. We need to be we must never equivocate. As soon as you're equivocating as a political organization, people start doubting you. And I think there was too much equivocation and too much explanation and a lot of ill discipline.
Second last question, and it will be the last post-mortem question, and then I've got a question about the current news cycle to end off with. In terms of how you reacted after the results came out, ceding some support to, for example, the Freedom Front Plus, would you say, and I'll be kind and say with the benefit of hindsight, but actually I secretly think you shouldn't have been this erroneous at the time the results came out, that effectively saying, oh, well, you know, if people want to go into racialized lagers, let it be, or they fall for the race reductionism of the ANC at the other end of the ideological spectrum, there's nothing we can do. It came across to me as a voter, not even as a pundit, as a voter, as if you were explaining away some of that lack of success as externalities beyond your control. That is setting the bar for yourself very low, and it's scapegoating voters. Was the way in which you explained your own results a mistake?
Well, look, I never, ever explained it like that. I know exactly what I said at the end of the election, and I haven't had an interview with you about it. So I want to just comment and say that comments that were attributed to certain individuals in our party about good riddance and all that kind of thing is just completely unacceptable in a political environment, because that is the epitome of taking things for granted. But also, there's a great irony in this thing. Mm. The people that were making those kind of comments are the ones that represent themselves as purists. And purists are very exclusive kind of people. So they're saying, you know, we don't need you and you must go where you need to go. Now, that is the most short-sighted thing to do in politics. Because let me give you an example, Eusebius. Mm. The political party I belong to is the DA of 2019, is very difficult or different to the DA of 2010 and different to the DA of 2000, certainly different to the DP of 1994 and the Progressive Federal Party and the Progressive Party. Our party has become a home for people from all the political spectra. A great example of that in our home province is Naba Banga, who is currently the provincial leader, and under whose leadership the DA has actually done pretty well, especially in the last few by-elections. Naba Banga came from a background from the ANC. He then went to COPE and he's now the leader of the DA. So that's what's happening in our country. Political parties are realigning. Political parties that are serious to govern have to garner votes from all communities. So the DA understands that we can either be a small political party that remains in opposition forever, or we have to contest for power to govern, because where we govern, we actually have shown that we can govern well. Mm. Therefore, in order to do that, you've got to attract people from all various ideologies. So we've got people in our party that can be classified as right-wing and conservative. We've got people in our party that could be classified as left-wing and radical. But somewhere in between is the middle. Mm. And I think South African politics, if you're going to be successful, you have to find the middle.
Absolutely.
And if you can find that middle, things can hold. But if you start being a purist, or you start defining yourself as an exclusive kind of political ideology, you will remain a political party that will be on the fringes.
Mm. Last question, just about what's currently in the news cycle, Mr. Trollope. It was a mistake for Musi to be driving around in a sponsored white Toyota Fortuner, courtesy of Marcus Uster, right?
I'm listening.
I wonder whether you co-signed to that statement.
I wonder if I did what? Sorry?
If you'd agree with that statement, that driving around in a sponsored vehicle by Marcus Uster was obviously not going to help you to regroup.
Well, look, here's the thing. Political parties are forever raising money and finding support wherever they can to get the job done. And Musi Maimane and the Democratic Alliance were offered a vehicle by Marcus Uster's company, Steinhoff. There's a long story to how that happened, and I can share it with you. Musi Maimane and Jordan Hill Lewis had gone for a fundraising interview, and Jordan Hill Lewis's car would not start in the car park. And they were seen pushing the car in the car park after the interview. And one of the directors said, this is ridiculous. And he offered a vehicle. The vehicle was offered to the Democratic Alliance for the use of the leader, and Musi Maimane used it. At that time, there was no question mark around Steinhoff and its doings and business dealings. But then the bubble burst for Steinhoff, I think, in December or late December or early December 2017 or early 2018. And obviously then there was lots of issues around the company and the way that he had managed it or mismanaged it. And I believe that the DA should have used that as an indicator to immediately return the vehicle. Now, there's some speculation that the vehicle was not returned immediately. And I met with Musi about this on Sunday evening and Monday morning. And they're collecting all the evidence and information, emails, etc., and about when the vehicle was returned to ascertain exactly when it was returned and if there was a delay, why there was a delay. But in hindsight, Marcus Uster was probably the worst person to get a vehicle from. But their political parties, you know, our main competitor, the ANC, every time there's an election, they drive around in a fleet of vehicles where they get concessions from motor vehicle hire companies, or they get them for free. And it's an issue that happens across the world, I believe.
In the parking lot when Jordan Neil Lewis' car couldn't start up, obviously there was already goodwill and some chias between them and Marcus Juster, which is presumably why they were willing to give this car that then became inadvertently sponsored. How much funding did they manage to get in that meeting? Because obviously it must have been a really successful discussion then.
Well, I can't tell you how much funding we got, and up until as we speak today, there's no requirement for political parties to disclose their funding.
I know, but you are so committed to transparency that you don't care about the law not making it obligatory. Why don't you demonstrate transparency right now? Because that's a value that you know is a value that is dear to your heart, unless you have forgotten that it's important for you to be transparent. I know the law doesn't require you. Why wait for the law? Do the right thing. Tell my listeners right now.
Eusebius, I don't deal with the money that comes into the party. We've got a finance chairperson. We've got a CFO. I'm the chairperson of the party. I don't control everything in the DA, and I think it's a very good reason that people don't do that. We did get money from Steinhoff, the quantum of which I had no idea. But until the legislation requires us to declare how much money we get from our donors, we're not going to do that because it's a real case of you show me and I'll show you. So we're not, as a DA, going to be exposing our donors while the other parties are not doing that. It would be completely unfair and unrealistic to expect us to do that.
Mr. Trollope, I always appreciate your frankness. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you, CBS.